Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Well, finally, dude.
Yeah.
Finally, you're back from your little safari.
Right.
You missed so much, dude. It was killing me, all the news that you missed.
Yeah, I came back and, it was craptastic how much stuff happened.
What was it like to receive the email from me in Kenya about Mark Edward Vlasic's contract extension?
It was thrilling. It was thrilling. Yeah. Made my day.
Were you the only person in Africa who cared about that moment?
It would have been pretty funny to see the Puck Daddy stats from that day. You see that huge, you know, by you can if you do Google Analytics or other packages where you're tracking who's visiting your site, you can get it on a map and you see all these, you know, U.S. destinations, Canadian destinations, maybe some European, and then there's one weird dude in Kenya visiting Puck Daddy. That was me. That was me.
That was you. How was the trip, dude?
It was great. It was a lot of fun. We saw a lot of amazing things, and it was a total blast. And if anyone's thinking about going, I encourage it. It's a pretty cool time, and you see some stuff that you literally cannot see anywhere else on Earth. So definitely worth it. And I guess I picked the right time of year to go because really nothing happened. I checked Puck Daddy, and I was scrolling down very slowly because the internet connection was horrible. And I said, "That's all there is. That's it. That's all."
Yeah, there's not a lot going on right now.
Yeah, not a lot.
Everyone seems to be waiting to find out what's going to happen with the CBA. You know, not that I want to kick off by talking about that.
Yeah.
Bucket of boredom.
Yeah.
But we don't have a whole heck of a lot to talk about. Dude, give me like one highlight moment from the trip, like something that you think is like the best moment.
Okay. Well, one thing that happened is you go out in these, you know, safari vehicles like Land Cruisers, and you're driving around trying to find cool things to look at, take pictures of, you know, basically animals, right? And so everybody's looking for predators, lions, cheetahs, leopards, that kind of thing. So we find a cheetah, and the cheetah has 5 small cubs, which is completely unheard of. You never, ever see that. People were freaking out. And so they go off the road, and we're trying to find a way to go and see them again. And we see some lions on the way to see the cheetahs again, which was amazing enough. And so we stop for a minute to do the lions. We go back to see the cheetahs again. And the lions have seen the cheetah and the cheetah cubs. And lions are very territorial, and they will kill the cheetah and the cheetah cubs. So we witnessed a standoff. For several moments, they were just glaring at each other, the cheetah and the lions. Then the lions tried to make a move. The cheetah sort of took off. The lions pursued, and a whole fracas ensued where actually even the park rangers were trying to intervene because cheetahs are very endangered, and they were trying to keep the lions from killing the cheetah and the 5 small cheetah cubs. It was pretty exciting stuff. It was cool to see all that go down. I mean, it's like literally force of nature stuff going on here. It's like, you see a huge cheetah like trying to protect the cubs. The lions are coming after it. I mean, you know, and these cats are the size, you know, they'll come up to your hip. They'll come up taller than your hip on you. I mean, these are large, fierce animals. It was amazing.
That sounds awesome, dude. I think the best thing I did while you were gone is I watched Top Chef Masters.
Yeah. That's almost as good.
You too can see lions versus cheetahs if you're willing to travel 22 hours by plane.
It is about a whole day's worth of travel. Yeah, it takes a while. So
I know you got your nifty new Kindle. Did you read any hockey books, dude?
No, I was just reading a little bit of crap here and there. It was very busy days, so I didn't have a whole lot of time to really get into anything. And no hockey books yet. I think Puck Daddy or some sites used to do a hockey book review, but
there's actually a website that reviews hockey books. I think it's actually called like hockeybookreviews.com or something.
Fancy
really,
that.
Really creative like that. But I have a link to it on my RSS feed, and there are a few new books coming out. I think JR has a book coming out soon. So
that's true.
That should be an interesting read. See how many pages have Patrick Marleau written about in there. Well, I guess the little bits of Sharks news that we do have are that you know, Mark Edward Vlasic was signed to an extension by the San Jose Sharks. Dude,
mm-hmm.
What is your reaction to this in terms of the timing and also the deal that he got, you know, which is a 5-year extension with a cap hit of 4.25 per year? Worth it?
Yeah, it's. I wouldn't say it's particularly surprising. The Sharks certainly have a history of signing, re-signing players that they are eligible to re-sign, and the rules state, at least under the current CBA, that you know when a player is in the last year of his contract, you can renegotiate an extension. And Vlasic obviously was entering the last year of his deal. His new deal doesn't take effect until next year, and so you know the Sharks did that with Brent Burns. They've done that with other players. And Vlasic seems to be, you know, a good, he's still a very young player and a very good player, a quietly good player for the Sharks. And a $4.2 million cap, it seems about right to me. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a, certainly not an overpayment. I wouldn't necessarily call it like a massive underpayment either. But, you know, it's in line for a good young defensive defenseman that stays healthy all the time and takes care of business in his own end. So, you know, given the Sharks in general are sort of aging and we're going to see a pretty major turnover probably in the next few years, I think it's definitely a good move for the Sharks to try and hold on to some of these key pieces, you know, Joe Pavelski, Mark-Edouard Vlasic, Brent Burns, these kinds of players. And, you know, I'm happy when I read the news. I said, okay, you know, it's not a steal for either side and it's good. It's just good business. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think it's a good move because you look at what the going rate is for Matt Carl, which is $5.5 million, and Vlasic is $4.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have Vlasic and the extra $1.3 million per season.
Right.
You know, I think not that Matt Carl's not a good player, but he's not worth $5.5 million a year for a defenseman who is not as good defensively as Vlasic and is not in the Dan Boyle category of offensive defenseman. You know, he's solid. He's a high 30 point a game. Yeah. Oh my Lord.
Wow.
Hello, Gretzky. But 30 points a season, you mm-hmm. know? So I think Pickles actually left probably several million dollars on the table here. Maybe.
Right.
It, depending on the CBA. Now, you know, for if the cap goes down and teams are going to start giving out smaller contracts, you know, maybe this was a smart move on his part. We're certainly seeing a lot of players do these extensions now,
right?
Like Hartnell, Pacioretty, Taylor Hall, these guys all going for extensions quick so that they can get as much money as they can before whatever new rules apply, right?
Yeah. And there's probably going to be some stipulation, especially if the players capitulate like they did last time, where everybody takes a certain pay cut, and you know these new contracts will still be on the books. So there wouldn't be, you know, a new mindset that owners are operating under, given there's a new CBA to worry about. So I think that's probably what these guys are doing. Certainly, there's been a lot of contention. JR's been in the middle of it about how long contracts should be, and Taylor Hall, what did he sign, a 6 or 7 year deal? So, and you know, it's entirely possible that under the next CBA, those kinds of deals won't be possible anymore. So these guys want to lock it up now before new rules might come into effect. You know, maybe they see the writing on the wall and they say, I want to get this guaranteed money for as long as I can get it. And so, you know, Hartnell signs for 6 years. A great deal, in my opinion. I love Scott Hartnell. And Taylor Hall, he got $6 million a year for 7 years or something like that.
Yeah, Wayne Simmons also got an extension while you were gone. And I was kind of looking at both those deals and wondering, you know, although I think when you rank them, you would rank Hartnell, Simmons, and then Ryan Clough third, you mm-hmm. know, behind yeah. those. I think the other two are better players. And Ryan Clough in the last year of his contract, yep. I believe, Matt D'Agostini. Yes, I'm correct, making 3.6. You know, is Clough now going to see a bump up to the fours, you know, with these guys, or has he kind of, is he kind of banking on having a big year this year? Does he have to be in the 50 point range, dude, to really get that kind of contract?
I think so. To get $4 million a year, yeah, he's going to have to be in that.
Because
that
he was consistently in the high 50s, 60s
mm-hmm.
for 3 years, and last year was a dud with 45 points. So if he throws up another 45 points, you know, he's going to be costing himself some change here.
Yeah,
you know,
without a doubt.
So it'll be interesting to see in a contract year what happens with Ryan Clough, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to come up big, or is he going to struggle and not be able to find that scoring touch that he had, especially in 2010, 2011? Dude, speaking of scoring touch, the Sharks looking to remake themselves in an image, as Doug Wilson has said, that he wants to really take it at teams, not be soft anymore, and play much stronger in their own end. Aggressive forecheck. They have decided to give a tryout to a player that embodies all those things.
Right. When I think of grit and holding down his own end and really taking it to the other team physically, who can you think of but Sergei Samsonov, a 5'8", 180-pound left winger who is... not scored more than 13 goals in 6 years or whatever it's been. And man, that's exactly who I'm thinking of. If he's cracked double digits in penalty minutes, it's because he fell down into the goaltender at the other end of the rink and took offensive goalie interference penalties.
So I take it you're not excited about this.
I am not excited. No, I can't say I'm excited about Sergei Samsonov. It's funny, you know, putting this through the filter of an email we read several podcasts ago from a person who claimed to have some insider knowledge about Joe Thornton and how he wants more skill players. Well, this is a player that is a skill player and did play with Joe Thornton back when Joe was with Boston, and so was Samsonov. So, you know,
and was scoring, you know, 29 goals, 29 goals, 75 points, 70 points.
Yeah.
I mean, once upon a time, now we're talking in a land far, far away, in 2000, 2001, this guy was a 70-point player. He has not even come close to that since then. Since then, his highest point total was 48 points with Carolina in 2008, 2009. So it's not the same guy.
Not the same guy at all. But it made me think of that email when I heard Sergei Samsonov, because there's an obvious Joe Thornton connection here. He is a skilled Russian player. At 33, I think the tires may be getting a little bald at this point, but who knows? He didn't play at all last year. Is that the case? Maybe he got rested up and healthy and in shape. You know, that's the most charitable way I can think about this situation. And, you know, maybe this is Joe Thornton or somebody else saying, hey, you know, we can't go grit and everything, but we're also going to need a little bit of skill. And let's just kick the tires. Let's mix metaphors. Kick the bald tires of Sergei Samsonov and see if he's still got something left in the tank. I don't know. I guess there's another Sharks connection in that Igor Larionov is his agent or something.
Yeah, I guess so.
And so obviously,
unless that's a very popular name out in Russia, could be.
I don't think so.
Could be the Joe Smith of Russia. Yeah. You know, you don't know.
But I guess, you know, that's obviously a Sharks connection. So, but another thing I heard is that the Sharks aren't the only team that they're engaging with. Other teams may be interested in Samsonov. So,
well, this is not a contract. This is a tryout.
Yeah,
and if someone wants to give him a contract, which is highly doubtful,
right?
At this point, when you have a lot more quality players still out there on the market, you know, a guy like Samsonov is going to have to take a tryout, especially given his performance the last couple of years. And there's deeper roots here between, you know, Thornton and Samsonov. People remember they were both drafted by Boston in 1997. And there's actually a really great documentary that was on CBC that is on YouTube, actually, dude. And I'm going to meant to forward you the link. And I can't remember where or who posted this, if it was Puck Daddy or some other blog that had posted the link to this, mostly under the premise of it covering Mike Milbury, you know, at that draft, and how, you know, he was, you know, maneuvering and making all kinds of deals and looking foolish in the process, etc. But there's some funny, actually we should put it on the blog, because there's some funny coverage of a, you know, 1997, 18-year-old Joe Thornton.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it's pretty funny to see him basically the same guy, yeah. but just, you know, 15, 16 years younger. And it's kind of funny, but Boston was thrilled to get Samsonov in that spot. And there's some coverage of Samsonov in that documentary. And I thought it was really interesting. I was bummed that it's a 6-part documentary and I could only find the first part.
Oh,
So it's missing some stuff, but they fall around Pat Burns and, mm-hmm. you know, it was really cool. So there's definitely, these guys have deep ties, you know, mm-hmm. Joe mm-hmm. Thornton and Samsonov, because they broke in together with Boston and played together and had success. And, you know, it would not be shocking if Joe Thornton was behind this.
Right.
And it also points the finger back at, you know, okay, we couldn't get Nash. If Samsonov works out even a little bit, here's the other opportunity again to move Joe Pavelski back to the third line center, which
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's the right thing. You know, we've talked about that. We're not sure that's the right thing. And we do fear the long-term impact that would have on Joe Pavelski's future in Teal. But, you know,
yeah,
it wouldn't be surprising if that's the way they wanted to go. You know, McClellan certainly went that way 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he wants to go back there because the bottom six of the Sharks right now is a little weak.
A little thin.
A little thin. It's too bad they don't have James Shepherd. That might really shore it up. What do you think's going on with that? I mean, don't you find that bizarre that this guy, the Sharks traded for
him. Is he under contract?
No. He was tendered a qualifier.
Okay, so.
But he hasn't signed. You know, him and Petrecki, unsigned.
Okay.
Restricted free agents. And, you know, is there really some sort of huge contract dispute with James Shepherd? Like, shouldn't he just be saying thank you, mommy, to Doug Wilson?
I think Doug Wilson might have changed phones. He like got the new Galaxy S3, which apparently is some great phone, and he just accidentally deleted James Shepherd's number. And
I guess he wouldn't be afraid to walk away from him because.
And he gets calls, and he's like 408-775. Who is this? Delete. You know, ignore. And like, there's James Shepherd on the other end. I want to sign the contract. Please let me sign.
I promise I won't go on any more ATVs or mountain bikes. Whatever. Right.
That was Eric Johnson. I'm not going to drive any more golf carts.
Does he sound like that? James Shepherd from now on.
That's the James Shepherd like voice.
I'm really excited to play on the third line.
He sounds like the Jackie puppet. James Shepherd.
I'm the James Shepherd.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. I have no idea.
I find that odd. Yeah, I think it's strange that that hasn't been addressed and that's sort of floating around still, that James Shepherd is unsigned. But there's a lot of players that do not have homes yet, and the trade market has completely dried up.
Sure. Well, I mean, the CBA has locked everything, right? I mean, no one knows what the situation is with the CBA. It's certainly looking great. I guess we can start talking about it a little bit. I don't want to spend too much time on it because, one, it's kind of depressing. Two, it's rather boring. Like you eloquently put at the top, it's a big bucket of boredom. But, I mean, basically what's happened is what? The owners put an offer out there, which was laughably crazy. And then the players put out an offer that to most people seemed to be fairly reasonable, including a big part about revenue sharing. And now the owners put another kind of crazy deal saying, okay, well, we want your share to go from 57% to 43%. And we want to redefine what hockey related revenues are to make it more advantageous for us. And the players seem to be shaking their heads like, are you guys nuts? I mean, it almost seems like the owners want another lockout, or maybe they're just playing hardball, but who knows? I mean, at this point, I have to think there's going to be a lockout. I mean, I think if I had to handicap this thing, and obviously I'm not in the room and listening to the tone of the discussions, I'd say, you know, 70% chance we're going to miss the beginning of the season, maybe higher.
It's tough because, you know, you've heard so much about how the guys who are in the NHL that played through the last lockout,
mm-hmm.
you hear that there's just no way that they're going to do that again. You know, that they're going to go without a paycheck, or that they're going to go to Switzerland. Like, reportedly, yeah. Jumbo and Rick Nash are going to have their love affair again.
Yeah, at Davos.
And play in the KHL and play in the ECHL and go play for considerably less money than what they're making, unless they're going to Russia. But that's a whole nother situation. Like, you know, I'd be surprised if anyone other than some Russian stars went over there. That they're really going to give up their checks. And I think the owners are banking on that right now because they're being apparently ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
I agree, dude. I've sort of come to peace with that. Hockey is not going to start on time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were joking about how maybe the San Francisco Bulls schedule needs to be on our calendar right now and not the Sharks, because our best shot to see hockey in October is probably the Bulls, you know?
Yeah. And I'm telling you right now, if there's no San Jose Sharks hockey, I'm going to see some Bulls games.
Yeah, this I'm will quickly going. Become a Bulls podcast. Yeah.
That's right.
This is something that was talked about on Chronicle Live that I agree with and that I think is the most realistic situation. It would be shocking if the owners allowed this to get past the Winter Classic.
Right.
That is way too high profile. They've worked way too hard to get that game going
on the sports calendar.
And to become an annual event that people look forward to. And they're going to pass up the opportunity to have 100,000 fans.
Right.
You know,
because it's in Michigan this year, right?
At that game. That they're really not going to do that game. And it was mentioned that, you know, this may be some backroom strategy all along, that maybe that's the first game.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And the season starts from there. If you're looking for conspiracy. So it's, that wouldn't be shocking to me at all. And a lot of people think the season is too long anyways, and no one really gives a crap about preseason. I know we don't.
Yeah, certainly not.
You know, those games are hard to watch, especially as a season ticket holder, when you're paying full price to watch, you know, John McCarthy play 25 minutes.
Right.
Like, you know, you're not interested in that at all. We sort of suck it up and make like we care, but, you know, it is hard
every
to watch.
Sport,
yeah,
right?
and they do it in every sport, and definitely those games, I think, are in jeopardy, dude, but... Do you think it's possible the season will be lost altogether? What do you put on the odds on that?
I'd say that's pretty small. I'd say under 20%.
Yeah.
For that. And I think you, me, and Don Cherry sort of all agree. I think Don Cherry said something about how the Winter Classic might be the first game of the season. That's a lot of money. It's 100,000 people. They're all paying maybe close to $100 a ticket. You average that out, that's $10 million the league's just going to throw away.
It'd be very similar to what the NBA did last year. Very similar.
Yeah.
And they seem to rebound. NHL doesn't have quite the depth of fan base and worldwide appeal of the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they're looking at that as the model and going, okay, well, NBA survived it. Maybe we can too.
Right.
And
I think with Don Fehr as the players union rep, they're not going to see another capitulation the way we saw it in 2005, which is basically the players saying, oh, we'll never agree to a cap, we'll never agree to all these conditions, and then lo and behold, they agreed to basically everything. Mm-hmm. I think there's a much bigger plan in place for the players at this point, so I think the negotiations could be tougher. So for that reason, I think you know, there might be a bigger chance of, you know, a season being lost, but I think the players just have a better bargaining position, even in the public, because they took a huge haircut, you know, 6 years ago. I think that the public is more on their side, even more on their side this time than they were last time. Last time, it's like, oh, the players are making so much money. There's no salary cap. They're just living high on the hog here. And now it's like, oh, well, the players took this, you know, now you have a salary cap. The players took like a 25% pay cut. And now you want them to take another one. That just sort of seems inherently unfair, especially since league revenues have grown by, what, 40 or 50% since then. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out, because I know that, you know, reading blogs and Puck Daddy and comments and things like that, there's not a whole lot of people out there, you know, fans, you know, and obviously this isn't a scientific poll, but people don't really seem to be on the owner's side at all. And last time, I certainly remember when the lockout happened and we lost the whole season. It was definitely more split. There were sort of people on either side of the argument, and now it seems like almost almost universally that the players are seen to have sort of the moral high ground at this point. So we'll see.
I'm just so bored with the whole thing, dude. It's like I try to read up on it. I try to become as informed as possible. I get about six sentences in, and I just it's frustrating.
Yeah,
you know, and
I don't mind reading about, you know, the different terms that they want, but I hate the public posturing stuff, like the stuff that they say into the media to try and position, you know, the stuff yeah. Bill Daly says, or the stuff that Don Fehr says, or the stuff this guy says. It's like, I don't care about that. It's just like, you know, I want to know what sort of the proposals are. I want to know what the details are. Then I can make up my own mind of what I think is fair, and then just sign the deal or don't sign it. Like, just right. keep going back and forth and make it happen.
Right.
But unfortunately, or fortunately, I think this is definitely going to be sort of Gary Bettman's legacy, is that the inability to have labor peace, you know, for Gary Bettman. I mean, I think that's what's going to, I mean, he was around for the 94 lockout. He was around for the 05-06 lockout. It's probably going to be another lockout this year.
Hey, three's a charm, baby.
But is there any commissioner in modern sports history that has presided over this number and severity of labor stoppage? It's a huge black mark on his record. And I wonder if he's thinking about that. I mean, basically, he's gonna turn into a guy that just couldn't keep the league together.
Well, I mean, he's already universally booed, so
it's true.
I mean, what does he have to? You know, this isn't gonna fix anything in terms of his image. Probably
he'll probably get another raise though if they win.
Well, I mean, something that ties a little bit into the labor discussions, but you know, the Phoenix Coyotes saga drags on, and the Shane Doan drama drags on, and. You know, there's been conflicting reports where Kevin Kurz reporting the Sharks are still in on Shane Doan, one of the final teams in on Shane Doan, and probably 24 hours later, David Pollock reports that the Sharks are out.
Right.
Because Doan wants 4 years, and he didn't even get into money, really. And the Sharks were really willing to offer two. So,
yeah.
You know, there's no proof that this is just a report that was on Working the Corners. And then today it comes out that Buffalo is the team that offered the 4 years, $30 million.
I know, I read that.
And
God, that's a lot of money.
It's crazy money, you know? And if you're Shane Doan, you know, last shot to get that kind of cash, I guess if you're Shane Doan, you'd be saying, winning be damned, I'm going to take the money. And go to Buffalo and maybe make the playoffs and definitely not win a Stanley Cup. And
right.
And you know, that I don't know. Could you fault him for making that decision?
I couldn't, but I think if Vancouver made that offer, he would have signed it already.
Sure. But there's no way that they've made that offer.
Well, yeah. Cause he hasn't signed it already. Yeah, I think the, not that Buffalo isn't a good hockey town and it supposedly is a good hockey town, but I it's not a knock against Buffalo, but I don't think everybody puts Buffalo at the top of their destination list. Western New York, it's cold. It's bitterly cold in the wintertime. It's pretty brutal. It's not, a metropolitan area, big area like, you know, New York, Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver. You know, I mean, it'll appeal to some players, but, you know, if you have your pick of the litter, Shane Doan, I don't think that would be your top pick. So maybe he's just sort of hanging out. I mean, as long as the offer's on the table, he can hang out and see if something better comes along.
Now that Jameson has reportedly sort of scraped the cash together, and it looks like...
Is that finally going
to
happen?
Well, it looks like it's getting closer to becoming a reality. You know, that then...
Whatever that means. It's been closer to becoming a reality for the last 6 months.
I'm thinking now... If he's waited this long, he's just going to stay. He's just going to stay in Phoenix.
Yeah.
If he's waited this long, you know, he's got to have a decent contract offer out there from a good team.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, even if the offer from, let's say it's the Sharks and it was, you know, 2 years, $10 million or something.
2 years, 15 even.
Yeah. And... If winning was a priority, you got to think Vancouver offered something similar. Detroit, Flyers, you know, offered probably, you know, more than that. You know, probably Paul Holmgren offered his, you know, platelets or whatever, bone marrow, whatever he could scrape together to Shane Doan. The fact that he's holding steady this long. this long.
It means that he's at least waiting for an offer from Phoenix.
Right. And yeah, how want would it be if Greg Jameson buys a team and he goes, hey, Shane, listen, we just don't have the money.
Yeah.
You know that there's no way that's the case. Like, well, they've had...
Jameson's not a dummy.
No one. Jameson, they've already had the discussion.
Of course. And they say, if we buy the team, this is the offer we're going to tender.
If we get the team, this is the money we're going to give you. And he said, okay, I will wait. And when it goes through, I will sign it. It will be probably the thing that happens. Shane Doan will probably be sitting next to Jameson when they announce that he bought the team.
Right.
You know? So I have 100% given up on Shane Doan being in Teal as much as I was in love with the idea. And I thought maybe for a flirting moment, it might be real. Once again, you know, we come up short, and I don't know why we even tease ourselves in July that someone, a big ticket impact player on the free agent market, might actually come to San Jose.
Because this is what sports are all about. You get your hopes up and then they get dashed. This is how it works.
And then you sign Kent Huskins.
Sergei Samsonov. All right, dude. Well, we've made it through another podcast without talking about much of anything except for Sergei Samsonov.
We did. We actually had quite a fruitful discussion, dude.
I think so too.
What did you eat in Africa?
It's pretty Americanized food. I mean, most of it's there's a good tourism industry there, so it's a pretty well oiled.
Did you
machine.
Have spaghetti?
Because
I think that would be weird.
It was available. Like, I had pasta and tomato sauce there. It's a little strange, but
I know. I just think that would be strange.
But you know, we were staying in places that definitely catered to Westerners and people that could afford a decent lodging. So I mean, they would cater to us. They wouldn't give. You know, the standard Kenyan meal. Apparently, they eat basically the same meal every night. And maybe I'm, if we have a Kenyan listener, set me straight.
Oh, please let there be a Kenyan listener.
I hope so. But
you mean you weren't passing out cards?
No. There were some people from Minnesota there, and I really tried to get a discussion going about Suter and Parise, but he was a Vikings fan, so didn't have much to talk about as far as that goes. So anyway, but. No, it was cool. No hockey rinks. I didn't see any hockey rinks in Kenya, surprisingly.
That's not surprising.
Oh, really?
No.
I'm just kidding.
Do you think any of the Sharks should go on performance-enhancing drugs?
Should they? Might as well. They're probably as bored as us.
Sorry.
Heck, I'm thinking about shooting up right now.
Can we talk about this just for the last 2 minutes, dude, and then we'll get out of here?
What's that?
Well, you've heard about what happened with the San Francisco Giants, right?
And now, like, in Oakland A, right?
With Bartolo Colon.
Yeah.
But the craziest part about the thing with the Giants player is that he actually went to great lengths to, like, create a fake website to make it look like the item that he bought was, like, legitimate.
I heard about this.
And that, like, and that's
then they,
crazy,
and then they,
right?
Like, look at the website registration and it says, like, Milky on it or something. It's like Milky Ink.
Go Daddy. You know? Yeah. I mean, it's certainly not as out there as the Mike Danton thing.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
But and Danton evidently is interviewed on Merrick versus Wyszynski.
I haven't heard.
I haven't listened to it yet.
Yeah,
he has a new book out, I think. Actually,
of course. Inevitably.
But
who ghost wrote that? Poor bastard.
This Cabrera thing is just crazy. It does beg the question, you know. In terms of hockey players, you know, how many of these guys, in addition, are on some sort of performance-enhancing drug? You don't hear a lot about the drug testing program for hockey players. You hear about the drug treatment program, you know, with Tutu and other players, you know, either voluntarily or, you know, mandatory drug treatment. Yeah, have you ever heard of any sort of drug testing? Is that even part of the CBA?
I think it is. I think there is some performance-enhancing drug testing. I have no idea how accurate this is, but some of the stuff I've heard about hockey and performance-enhancing drugs is, you know, performance-enhancing drugs it'll help you a little bit with hockey, but not nearly as much as baseball, right? You make contact with a baseball, and you're stronger, the ball is going to go further, you're going to hit more home runs, sort of. And end of it. But let's say you like gain 5 miles per hour in your slap shot or 5 miles per hour in your wrist shot. Like, is that really going to help you that much? Like, I don't know if it will. And, you know, getting bigger a lot of times means getting slower. Like, you know, it's you're a little bit, I'm a little bit shocked sometimes when, you know, you see Joe Thornton with his shirt off or other players who are, you know, wearing either tight fitting clothes or no shirts or something. And you would sort of expect them to be ripped the way that football players are. And they kind of aren't, you know, they're not. And just because it, I mean, obviously, if it was a massive advantage to be like that in hockey, we would see players like that. And the fact is we don't. Even the very best players. I mean, you see Sidney Crosby or whatever, and sure, they're in great shape, but they're not cut the way like T.O. was cut when he was doing crunches in his front yard, right? So I just don't know if it's that big of a, if it's that big of an advantage to be taking that kind of stuff. Frankly, I don't know if it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mike, expert on a men's physique.
Well, everybody has hobbies.
And on that note.
Yeah, we better get out of here because now I'm just purely talking.
I think that's a good, that's a really good answer. You know, I feel satisfied with that answer.
Yeah.
And I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, and you're right. I mean, who hasn't seen Jumbo with the shirt off during those after interviews? It's hilarious.
I think everybody but the Pope has seen that.
And you're right. I mean, it's not to say he's not in great shape or he's not strong, but he is. It is not the same as looking at, you know, some of these football players, you know, in magazines, like they're just gigantic. You know, it's not the same thing.
Right.
So, definitely more of a leaner body type. So, yeah, maybe you're right. I mean, that's why you don't hear about it. Is that they just doesn't give much of an advantage, so they're not going to do it.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my working theory.
They had Victor Conti on talking about it, and he says, you know, you're an idiot if you don't think that. He said half the players in Major League Baseball are on performance-enhancing drugs, and the host was like, I think that's maybe a little much, but,
yeah,
you know, he said cheating happens, and most of them know how to avoid it.
Right.
You know? And so I just
and
wonder.
That's even with a 50-game suspension getting rained down on you. I mean, those are the harshest penalties, too.
Yeah. And that, I mean, the milkman cost himself probably $50 million. That's a $50 million mistake.
Oops.
Yeah. Oops. Oh, well. Tough. As they say, tough business. You'll get a tryout from the Sharks.
Well, anyway, dude, I think we've reached the end of our rope here as far as...
I could go another 23 minutes.
I'm sure we could. But let's hold it off to next week because there might be another hiatus in our near future. So we'll talk about that more next week and all the other things that are happening. All the many millions of things that are happening in the hockey world next week on Dudes on Hockey.
So, all right, dude. See you then.
See ya.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.